Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, welcome to the Mason and Ireland show. What is going on is a very good question. That is the great Marvin Gaye. It has been a powerful and moving weekend across America and here in Los Angeles after the killing of George Floyd last week by a police officer in Minneapolis. Protesters in L.A. flooded the streets this weekend. African-Americans tired of the police brutality and tired of oppression. It's been going on since the beginning, from slavery through Jim Crow and for the last 50 years. And it's time for all of us, regardless of race, John and I, two white guys, time for all of us to wake up and be compassionate and understand what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes. And I think that's what we saw across Los Angeles this weekend, John.
The overwhelming word that keeps popping into my head after, and I did nothing but watch the news and kind of take this all in, is empathy.
Yep.
I think we have to have a tremendous amount of empathy. And this is probably going to end up being one of the most honest shows we've ever done. And I'm going to start with this. I'm not sure two white guys, and if we include Lindsay, that's three white people. The only person on our show that's black is Funch, and he's the one who talks the least. I'm not sure we have any answers. I think we have to be incredibly full of empathy, not only today, but moving forward. And, you know, normally when we put the show together, we all send Funch of stuff and he puts it in and then we have to have it to go to if we need it during the show to help us make points or help us. And I noticed that I sent him seven pieces of sound this morning, and I've never, in the history of doing this show, and it's 20-plus years, I've never noticed what color the people are that are the sound. I just send it to them, whatever it is. Today, I sent him seven pieces of sound from black people.
Yep.
And if you listen to the show today, you're going to hear from a lot of people of color. And we're opening the phones right now, and they're going to stay open until 6:30. And we're going to take a lot of phone calls.
And by the way, our guest today, people of color, Kendrick Perkins, Michael Eric Dyson from The Undefeated, and, of course, sociology professor from Georgetown. Clinton Yates is going to join us a little bit later on. And again, as John said, a lot of phone calls and a lot of people venting and talking about what the weekend was like and talking, you know, about their lives. And what John and I can do best today is to listen. And like John said, empathy. Know what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes.
I'm in a little bit of a unique spot in that I've been working with the NBA for 20 plus years. So I'm around a lot of African-Americans who are famous. And if there's one thing I've learned is that when the games are over and everything ends, they go back to their homes and they do not fall into this special treatment category.
Right.
I don't know an African-American who has not felt prejudice. Not one. Michael Thompson, who I do every Laker game with, bought a new SUV when he was playing for the Lakers. Now think about this. The Lakers were the most popular group of people in Southern California in the 80s. They went to the finals every year. They were led by Magic and Kareem.
Yep.
And Michael, we have a running joke around ESPN, and I'm not saying this to be funny, but we used to kid around, who's the whitest guy at ESPN LA? And we would joke, Michael.
Yeah.
And still, Michael bought this new SUV, and 2 days after he owned it, he got pulled over for what he calls DWB, driving while black. And the question the officers asked him, Mace, was, where'd you get the money to buy this?
Sure.
Like they're going to ask me or you that.
Oh, like we're going to be pulled over in the first place.
And again, we're going to play a lot of sound today, and you're going to hear from a lot of people. But, Funch, I want to tee up the Jalen Rose sound, because I think Jalen articulates this in a way that Mason and I cannot. And that is that George Floyd deserved a lot better. And just because he wasn't famous, and he wasn't an entertainer, and he wasn't a basketball player, a football player, he lost his life, and it makes no sense. Here's Jalen Rose on ESPN.
I wish America loved black people as much as they love black culture. There are so many times that it gets cherry-picked and it gets piggybacked, but only when it's convenient. And sometimes it happens in entertainment and athletics. We're not here designed only to entertain. We're actually living and breathing human beings that have a multitude of intelligence, work ethic, discipline, and talent. We've overcome a lot just like so many other races. This didn't just start happening. You can Google. We've been sprayed with water hoses. We've been attacked by dogs. We've overcome it. I'm old enough to remember I have a dream, fight the power, screw the police. Now it's I can't breathe. This is not new, and it's not going to come from just us. We need people who aren't black. We need people who aren't brown. When you know these things are happening in your society to have a voice, a legitimate one, lock in step with us, protest with us, post with us, not just when it's convenient, when it can be uncomfortable. The illusion, the image of Colin Kaepernick taking the knee before a football game during the national anthem is the exact one that we see in Minnesota. When a guy was laying on the ground for over 8 minutes, handcuffed with a knee to his neck, and was murdered. Let's start calling these things what they are. These are murderings. These are lynchings. These things have caused pain throughout our society, for our community, for hundreds of years. We've been screaming out for your assistance.
And by the way, not new even in this... you know, as he was saying, not new even in this decade. You know, Michael Brown and Eric Garner and Tamir Rice and Walter Scott and Philandro Castile and Tamir Rice and Sandra Bland, and the list goes on and on. Now George Floyd. You know, there is something systematic here that needs to change. As Jalen said. African Americans are not just here to entertain. Regular, everyday, working people, as opposed to, John, as you pointed out, NBA stars, get treated differently when they are driving the streets or they're walking the streets. It's just there is a different standard for black people, according to police officers, than there is for white guys.
I don't know any other way to put this, but our black friends and neighbors have been telling us for years they get treated differently by the police than white people. And I don't know if we needed to be slapped in the face with videos, if we need a list like you just read, Mace, of it happening over and over and over and over and over again. But eventually, of course, people are going to reach their breaking point. Of course, they're going to say, I've had enough. And we're in a pandemic and people are out of work. And this was the perfect storm. And I guarantee you what Jalen said about white people taking the lead here. The people that elicit change are the ones who have the power. And most of the power is in the hands of white people. We have to listen. We have to ask the question, how can we help? If you're a white person not asking that question today, you don't get it. How can we help? And you're going to hear from a whole bunch of people today that are going to be talking about, you know, why this is happening and try and help us understand it. But at the end of the day, how can we help? If Mace, if we're back here in 6 months doing the same show again, then we failed miserably.
Yeah.
Just miserably. You know, we just don't get it. And you know, there's a... I don't know if you saw this, but it's been all over the internet. There are certain jobs, and I have great respect for police officers. I think, just like any other walk of life, that 99% of them are good. But this is one of the few professions that you don't get a 1%. There are certain jobs... like surgeon, where you're not allowed to be horrible at your job.
Yeah.
Chris Rock did a comedy routine about this years ago when he basically laid it all out for you that it's not an excuse for people to come on today and say, hey, remember that 99% of cops are good. That doesn't solve the harm. Listen to Chris Rock. This is a comedy bit he did 2 years ago. Listen to this. Funch, you got it?
You're going to have to say that again. What cut did you want?
Chris Rock.
Chris Rock.
Well, here's the thing, man. Whenever the cops gun down an innocent black man, they always say the same things. Man, they always say the same thing. It's like, well, it's not most cops. It's just a few bad apples. It's just a few bad apples. Bad apple. That's a lovely name for murderer. It's like, how'd they get that one? Bad apple. That almost sounds nice. I mean, I've had a bad apple. It was tart, but it didn't choke me out. Here's the thing. I know it's hard being a cop. I know it's hard. I know that it's dangerous. I know it is, okay? But some jobs can't have bad apples, okay? Some jobs, everybody got to be good. Like pilots. You know? American Airlines can't be like, you know, most of our pilots like to land. We just got a few bad apples that like to crash in the mountains. Please bear with us.
He's right.
Yeah, he's right. And by the way, part of the problem, too, is the powerful police unions. I watched a speech today by the president of the Minneapolis Police Department from last year where he talked about the oppression of police officers, the oppression of police officers. See, that's part of the problem. I think that Chris Rock is right. You cannot afford a few black apples. You cannot afford
bad
to have
apples.
A guy,
bad
a fat apples.
Apples.
You cannot afford to have a guy put his knee on some guy's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. You cannot afford to have that. And sadly and tragically, that is what happened in this incident last week in Minneapolis. That video, and Chris Rock is right, and Jalen Rose is right. That is a murder, and he has been charged with third degree murder. And it's an outrage that it took 4 days to charge him. It's an outrage that the three other police officers who were on the scene, two of them at one point had their knees on George Floyd, that they have not been charged with anything. That is by definition. They were complicit in this murder. They did nothing to prevent this murder. And it's an outrage that they haven't been charged in some way at this point. And I think that's one of the reasons why there's been such frustration in the streets. And I want to say something else, John. We're in the media business. We have lots of friends who work in television news across town. There's a lot of cable news that we've watched over the course of the weekend. You know, I don't think we saw enough of the peaceful protests that happened all over Los Angeles and all over the country, because that doesn't make good copy. Those don't make great pictures. There's been so much focus on those people that have not been at all about George Floyd, but have been about looting and destruction. Those people involved in that have nothing to do with the peaceful protest, but the cameras linger on those bad actors as opposed to all of the people, the thousands and thousands and thousands of people who were in the streets this weekend protesting in an appropriate way, in a legal and appropriate way. So I do think that the cameras dwell on looters, but the majority, the gigantic majority, most, almost all of the people protesting were doing so peacefully.
All right, 877-710-3776. That's our phone number, 877-710-ESPN. I'll give it to you one more time, 877-710-3776. We're going to do a lot of listening today, and we'll start with your calls coming up.
Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, rolling on Mason and Ireland, and after a powerful weekend in the streets of Los Angeles and across the country, we're going to take some of your phone calls right now. We'll let you know that coming up for you, Kendrick Perkins is going to join us. Michael Eric Dyson is going to join us. Clinton Yates is going to join us. So a lot coming up on the show. But today we are here to listen and figure out what it's like to walk in somebody else's shoes. That's really the theme of the show today.
Here's Brandon in Los Angeles on line one. Hey, Brandon, you're on ESPN 710. How are you?
Good. Thanks, John. Hey, Mace, I appreciate you guys taking my call, man. I just wanted to give you a little bit of my experience. As a black male, 27 years old, I've had guns pointed at me by police officers multiple times. I've had friends who just recently had that type of experience, not in California, but in somewhere, Louisiana. So that type of stuff is real, right? And it's frustrating. It's sometimes it can be numbing, right? You get numb because it's like almost like an expectation. At a certain point, when you come into an encounter with the police officer, you kind of expect it to go wrong at some fashion. So you're just seeing a lot of people frustrated. I think you brought up a good point with the COVID, all the anger and everything like that. But I want to offer three quick solutions.
Yes.
One solution is, I think that with police officers, you got to have police officers who come from the community that they police. You got to have more people from those communities in it. And if you want to have police, more policing in minority neighborhoods, you got to incentivize hiring minorities to be police officers. Because
yes,
minorities don't want to be police officers because of all the reputation that they get. So I would say that's one thing. That's kind of complex, but I would say that's one thing, maybe wrapped in a couple other things. But I think that's one, diversity, too. You got to have diversity training for these police officers. Some of them haven't had a lot of experience with African-Americans, and they might be in fear of African-Americans based on, you know, what this country has perpetrated about them. And then lastly, if you look at the budget in Los Angeles, you see that more than half of the budget in L.A. is going to police officers, right? And I think that budget needs to be changed to kind of deal with some of the systemic challenges that, you know, minority face. Instead of giving all that money to have people be police, why don't you invest that money into people, right? And change their circumstances. And then maybe you wouldn't have some of the crime rate, or maybe you wouldn't have some of the statistics that they use to justify having police officers. But those are the things that I wanted to say. Again, I appreciate you guys having this platform. I've been looking for a way to express myself. Haven't really been out there in the protests and things like that. So this is a good opportunity. So I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brandon. We appreciate you calling. And Mace, here's the thing. People, you know, like some people are saying, I don't understand. Why do people have to march in the streets? Well, think about it this way. It was 2016 when LeBron and Carmelo and Chris Paul and Dwayne Wade stood on the stage at the ESPYs in tuxedos, Mace, as dressed up and as formal as you can be, and pleaded with the country that this had to stop. They did everything you would do in a normal, respectful way, and it didn't work. Colin Kaepernick gave up his career by taking a knee during the anthem, and everybody said it was about the flag. It was about this. Colin Kaepernick was right. They've tried all that stuff. They've tried to get our attention in what I would refer to as polite, respectful
peaceful ways. Yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't work. It didn't work. Martin Luther King tried it his whole life and didn't make it to 40. They killed him. You know, and tried to do it in peaceful, respectful ways. And in no way am I advocating violence. I think anybody who's looting and burning things and breaking things is crazy. You're out of your mind. It's unsafe, and you're putting everybody in harm's way. And that's not the answer. But like you said,
right,
that's not necessarily the people who were protesting. They've glommed onto a cause. There's like it's like two separate ways. Did you hear all the interviews with people that they said, "Why are you here?" to the looters? And they said, "I'm just here to get mine."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they didn't have anything to say about the protests.
They had nothing to do with George Floyd. They had nothing to do with the protests. And you said, why do people have to march in the street? I mean, honestly, we were given, you know, constitutionally the right to assemble. And that's exactly what people are doing. We've based so much of the change in this country on the right to assemble. That's what Dr. Martin Luther King proposed. That's what and lived. That's what Vietnam protesters did. They exercised their right to assemble.
And Mace, they've
and
tried to do it. They've tried to
change.
Do it the other ways. They've tried to do, you know, go back and watch that speech with LeBron and Carmelo and Wade. They're saying it in 2016. They're saying that, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. Let's go to Justin in Long Beach, who was part of the protest yesterday. Hey, Justin, you're on 710 ESPN.
Hi, thank you for having me. Yeah, the protest was amazing. You know, we had a lot of people out there. It was really great camaraderie. Lots of chanting, a moment of silence for George Floyd. And I think it's great that a lot of news organizations are covering the protest, but I think what we need the civic leaders to actually talk about the issues that we're talking about. Talk about how police are aggressive in their tone. They're not very communicative when they come by, because the looting only started once the police just came out of nowhere with sirens flashing and made a line. Didn't say anything. Then all of a sudden they pulled out tear gas. I'm like, get back. And we're like, what's going on? We were just marching and, you know, just being a community and let our voice be heard. And I think that's kind of like, we talk about the Rodney King reforms that have happened since 1992, but it really doesn't feel like reforms have really been made. You know, we still have over-policing, we still have, you know, discriminatory tactics and, like, just a lot of aggressive tactics being talked about. And police are largely unaccountable for what they do, because without these video evidence, you know, we don't really have any kind of like recourse, because it's your word against theirs and another authority. So their word is going to be two of yours, basically, or worth more. So, this mutual respect, I think, needs to be addressed, and how we kind of have people who are de-escalators of conflicts.
Yep.
You know, maybe we need to have like psychologists or sociologists be police officers, so they are better with people and better with the community. And that's just kind of what I feel. I think the protests are going to go on and it's going to be largely peaceful. But like we said, there are elements of people who are taking advantage of it. But we want real reform. And our leaders, I saw Garcia and the mayor of LA, Garcetti, and Newsom talk, but they talked about the protest, and they talked more about the looting than they did about the actual message of everyone. So.
All right, thank you, Dustin, for the phone call.
So much of this, John, we've heard about, you know, is a training issue, the ability for police officers to de-escalate situations. And if you think about that, and what happened to George Floyd,
what happened was the opposite
of de-escalation. The opposite.
I know a lot of police officers, and everyone I've talked to has told me that's not part of your training at all. They don't know where that neck move came from.
And by the way, John, think about this. He mentioned video evidence. Imagine what all the incidents that happen where there is no video evidence.
Oh, did you see the university? Yeah.
All the decades that this has been going on, where there were no body cameras, where there was no cellular video, where there was no Facebook Live. Imagine the number of incidents that have taken place.
The University of Connecticut, the women's team, which is, you know, an absolute powerhouse, issued a statement. And in their statement, they were right. They said, you know, this has been going on all along. The difference is now we have video. You know, that's the difference, is that everybody's got a camera in their pocket.
Yeah.
So maybe that'll lead to some positive change. But the problem is, Mace, we've known, you know, you read a list of the victims earlier, and we've known that all of those were just egregious acts of brutality.
Yep.
And yet we sit here and we say thoughts and prayers, and we say, oh, it'll be better next time. And people have had it. They've just, if you look at those protesters, LZ Granderson, who does our morning show, did a video essay for the Los Angeles Times. It's on his Twitter account right now. You guys should go see it. It's very well done. For 9 minutes, he walked around with protesters in downtown LA. And Mace, if you look at the complexion of the people who are protesting, it's not just black people. This is different than 1992. In 1992, it stayed mostly on the east side of L.A., and yep. most of the protesters were all African-American. These, if you look at the pictures on your news, this is affecting everybody. Look at social media. It's not, and this is what Jalen Rose was talking about. There's a call for people like you and I and other white people to get on board here and say, look, until we insist that this is unacceptable, it's going to continue to go on.
Yeah.
And if you look at the complexion of the protesters, you're seeing black, white, Asian, all walks, ages, colors, creeds, religions, all of them are out there.
And, yeah,
and
you
so
know what
this
I noticed?
Is different. This
what
is different.
I noticed too, John, is, and this is a sign of hope for the future, an awful lot of the protesters are younger.
Good.
Are younger and of all colors. And, you know, that's the future. And that's our great hope is that this continues to, that we create a trajectory where this starts getting better. And as those folks, as those younger people begin to grow up and begin to move into positions of power, that they can affect the kind of change. But actually, we'll take a break right here. I was going to bring something up, but
We got Kendrick Perkins coming on at 3:30.
Yeah, I don't want to throw off our clock, and then we've got Michael Eric Dyson coming on at 4 o'clock. 877-710 ESPN, Mason and Ireland 710 ESPN. Hi, Mason and Ireland 710 ESPN. After a weekend in Los Angeles that we will not soon forget, and hopefully we will not forget. As protests all across Los Angeles took place in honor of the tragic killing of George Floyd last week in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I don't know, and we don't know, if the protests will continue tonight. There's all sorts of stuff on Twitter. I don't exactly know what to believe and what not to believe, but I know that there is a march tomorrow morning in Venice at 8 a.m. I do know that in my neighborhood. But beyond that, I'm not sure what's going to take place later on tonight or into tomorrow.
There is a countywide curfew, and not that everyone's following it, but there is a countywide curfew that goes into effect at 6 o'clock tonight. So we'll actually still be in the air when that happens. But they're going to try and control the looting and all the mayhem out in the streets. I wish they didn't have to do that, but the looting was pretty bad last night, and so they're going to try and keep businesses afloat, and I understand the reason for the curfew, but the respectful protest, in my opinion, have been the overwhelming thing that
yes.
I noticed when I watched this stuff, and people should be allowed to do that. By the way, I was wrong about Kendrick Perkins. He's at 3:45, so 3:45
okay.
if you're waiting for Kendrick Perkins, but I wanted to drop this in there, Funch. I'm going to give you a heads up that I'm going to go to this Michael Eaves piece of sound. Michael is a guy I know pretty well. We worked together in the LA market for a long time.
Yeah.
I was at KCAL when he was at Fox. We became pretty good friends. He's moved on to ESPN, and he's a really good writer. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the guys that at ESPN, when you see people do SportsCenter, sometimes a producer writes a lead and sometimes you write it yourself. Michael likes to write stuff himself, and you're about to hear why. Here's how he threw to a package last night. And I think, again, going with the spirit of empathy, I think if you're a white guy, there's no way that you can understand this feeling unless somebody like Michael explains it to you. Here's Michael Eaves last night on SportsCenter.
Not going to lie. Due to the events of the last several days, I almost didn't come to work tonight. Was because I was worried that I might come in contact with an overbearing police officer or gun-toting wannabe cop patrolling his neighborhood on my commute? Nah, I'm a black man, a couple years short of 50. I've lived nearly half a century with the possibility that I could end up with a gun pointed at me due to racism. I almost didn't come to work tonight because some of the reaction to recent events reminded me that there are several people watching me right now who feel that the color of my skin makes me less worthy of basic human rights and dignity. And the thought of providing those people with news and entertainment literally made me sick to my stomach. But clearly, I did come to work anyway. But I did come to prove something to the racists of the world. I came for the tens of millions of young black boys and girls across this country who need to know that they are loved. Their lives do have value, and they are worthy of every opportunity this nation guaranteed its citizens upon its inception. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And as Jeremy Schapp reports, it may be the people we cover on a nightly basis from the sports world that become the most important catalyst in the whole nation finally achieving those American ideals.
Well said.
And it doesn't matter if you're famous or you're affluent or whatever. If you're black, chances are you've got those concerns. I mean, the players I cover, Mace, all who make millions more than I do, are worried that their kids can't go walk to the store because they might get jumped. It's just unless, like Jalen Rose said, unless the rest of us get involved here, then it's going to continue. We're going to have these things go on and continue to go on. I don't know any other way to put it, but we got to get involved.
Kareem wrote an op-ed in the LA Times. I want to read an excerpt from that. He says, the black community is used to the institutional racism inherent in education, the justice system, and jobs. COVID-19 has been slamming the consequences for all African Americans as we die at a significantly higher rate than whites, are the first to lose our jobs, and watch helplessly as Republicans try to keep us from voting. African Americans have been living in a burning building for many years, choking on the smoke as the flames burn closer and closer. Racism in America is like dust in the air. It seems invisible, even if you're choking on it, until you let the sun in. Then you see it is everywhere.
And Kareem's a really good writer, obviously.
He's an amazing writer,
And you can make the argument that Kareem's the most recognizable person on earth. You know, you see Kareem, mainly he's 7'2", and was famous his entire life. But that's well worth reading, the whole article in the LA Times that you just read the excerpt from. Let's get Jamie from LA in here on line 6. Hey, Jamie, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hi, John. Hi, Mace.
Hey, Jamie.
First, I'm going to introduce myself. I'm the daughter of a former police chief, I'm a black woman.
Okay.
So first, I want to introduce myself like that. I wanted to tell you...
You know, Jamie, we're having a really hard time hearing you. Your phone is clicking in and out. Let's put you on hold for a second to see if we can get a clearer connection with you.
Yeah, Funch,
okay?
pick Jamie up and see if you can get either maybe a landline or get her to stay in one place, and we'll get right back to her. It is, and we're hearing, obviously, Mace, from a very diverse crowd tonight. It's different from, you know, obviously when we're talking baseball or football or basketball, it's people that are kind of living through this thing, and it seems to me, I don't know, I'm curious what you think. Maybe I'm being a little Pollyanna, but it seems to me this time is different. It seems to me that maybe it's with social media, maybe it's the fact that a ton of people who aren't minorities are reacting to this in a supportive way. But I feel like we have a chance. I heard Sage Steele. She was talking to Lewis Riddick on SportsCenter today, and she said, I was talking to my kids today, and I feel we got a chance this time to get through to people. What do you think?
You know, I hope. You know, I think the big question, John, is the how. You know, we're talking about it, but what's the answer to the how? I don't think anybody has succinctly explained how we go about making this change. You and I, what specifically can we do other than use our platform to talk about it? Maybe that's enough. Maybe people using their platform to talk about this as a real issue is enough to help create change. Maybe all those people in the streets protesting peacefully, maybe that is enough to raise awareness amongst people who wouldn't think of going to a march. But I think the how is the big question. And, you know, I think so many things sort of came together to create this weekend. It was, you know, this sort of everybody was pent up from the pandemic. A lot of people aren't working. A lot of younger people aren't in school or at college right now. So much came together to create sort of this weekend the perfect storm where so many people came to the streets. And maybe that is enough to wake people up to the reality of how African Americans live every day, everywhere.
I think it's a fair point. The how is the big question. French, were we able to get a better connection with Jamie or no?
No, I had to let her go.
Okay. Why don't we try Jose on line four? Jose, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, thank you, gentlemen, for letting me be a part of your show.
Sure, Jose.
So, you know, so many things you guys have been talking about. You know, I got so many thoughts in my head. The initial thought that I had when I called in was sometimes it doesn't even matter that you're a basketball player or a celebrity, because being black, you're going to get racially profiled either way. And one of the things that popped in my head was a couple years ago, Sterling Brown, that was unnecessarily taken down by the Milwaukee cops.
That's Jose, that's Shannon Brown's younger brother, Shannon Brown, who won two rings with the Lakers. I met Sterling when he was, you know, 11 or 12 years old. And there's video of what you're talking about on the internet. He seemed to be completely cooperating. And it just got ugly when they tried to muscle him. That's actually a really good point.
If you remember the video, it's just because he had his hands in his pocket because they wanted him to take his hands out of his pocket. That's when they took him down. And when they took him down, I remember one part of the video, one of the cops was stepping on his foot, and Sterling asked him, why are you stepping on my foot? And the cop says, so you won't kick me. And Sterling Brown responded, why would I kick you? I mean, that's the kind of mentality that some of these cops have that just frustrates me. And then that's not the only example. I mean, you do remember James Blake, the tennis player who was just standing on the hotel room by a hotel he was staying at, and he gets taken down by an off-duty cop because he looked like a suspect, right? And the cop didn't come up to him. He didn't say, hey, I'm a cop. You look like somebody. He just took him down. He just
right. And like I said, Jose, at the start of the show, I don't know, and I know a lot of obviously famous, successful African-Americans. I don't know any of them who doesn't have a story, maybe not that bad, but a story of when they've been racially profiled. Oprah has stories of that. I mean, it's just that's the world those guys live in.
Yeah.
And one thing that you guys were talking, it just reminded me. It was like last week or 2 weeks ago, you guys were talking about Donald Sterling and how, like, if the media was culpable, if the NBA owners were culpable of letting him be an owner for as long as he was, right? You guys were asking, was it our fault for not saying anything? Was it our fault that he was in the position he was for such a long time? And that's the same question you have to have, like, in our society.
Yeah.
Is it white America's fault that that they won't stand up and say, hey, there's something wrong and we need to fix it? And how long is this going to happen? And it wasn't until like something came out for Donald Sterling to get kicked out.
Yeah.
It's extreme for him to get caught on video. And it's the same thing now. It has to be, and this is just too extreme, where a black man has to die in order for things to change. And I'm just going to let you guys go and talk about that. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I mean, we talked about that with Donald Sterling, because there's that series on Quibi right now about the way he treated his players and the way he ultimately was forced out of the league. And I've always thought that we gave Donald Sterling a free ride for way too long. And I don't know that that would happen again. I think we would call out, that kind of behavior now. But don't you think we did give Donald Sterling a free ride for a long
time? The whole media, we were all guilty of
all
it,
of
including
us.
Me and you. And all the evidence was out there that guy was a racist, and we just chose to ignore it.
And don't you agree that it would be different now?
Yeah, well, and social media plays a role in all this. You can be called out by anyone. Let's squeeze Juan from Long Beach in here on line five. Hey, Juan, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Along the lines of what you guys are talking about, Donald Sterling, one of the things that needs to happen in order for this to change is the overall culture and the mentality of police officers needs to change. One thing I didn't tell the producer there was that I lived with the police officer for a few years, and just talking to him about the mentality of these police officers and about, you know, you talk about how the guys in the MLB, they won't snitch on each other, right? They won't tell on each other. These cops are the same way. They don't want people, like, one of the questions when they interview people to be a police officer is, if your mother was speeding, would you give her a ticket? And it's like, you know, they don't want you to say yes. They want you to say, well, it depends. You can give, you know, because they want you to kind of have that good old boy mentality. And the thing that we need to realize is, not just 1% of these cops are bad. and I'm going to explain how. If you physically or if you violate someone's human rights as a police officer, you're part of the problem. But if you witness someone, as a police officer, if you witness another police officer violate someone's rights and you don't report them, you are also part of the problem. So it's a lot more than 1%. I'm going to challenge you on that, John. It's a lot more than 1% of these cops are bad. Because if you're a cop and you witness another police officer violate someone's human rights and you don't say anything, you are also part of the system and part of the problem.
Well, and thanks for the phone call. One thing, Mace, that's what you were talking about at the top of the show, that those other three officers who were certainly complicit in George Floyd's death,
yep,
haven't been charged with anything yet.
No, haven't been charged with anything. And that doesn't mean they won't be, but it does seem to be taking, it took 4 days for Derek Chauvet to be charged. Right. It took four long days. And I think that's one of the reasons why Derek Chauvin, it took four long days. And I think that's one of the reasons why the frustration kind of boiled over, because we all saw, and I watched, I don't know if you did, but I put myself through the process of watching all 8 minutes and 46 seconds. It's shocking and it is painful. And it's something that you cannot unsee. And the fact that those other three officers were there seeing it and not calling their co-worker off that is a crime in itself.
All right, two things. Kendrick Perkins coming up next, Mace. I just got a message on my phone that they bumped up the curfew by an hour. So the curfew is now going to start at 5 p.m., go till 6 a.m. tomorrow. 5 p.m. to 6 a.m. We're a sports show, so we'll sprinkle in some sports throughout this, but primarily we want to provide a forum for you guys to talk about what's going on. So again, our phone number is 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776.
And by the way, Michael Eric Dyson coming up for you at 4 o'clock today. He is just, he's a phenomenal speaker, and knows these issues, and is going to bring a lot of intelligence to it that, frankly, John and I are not capable of. Sad but true. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. It is a different kind of show today because we are reacting and giving you a chance to react to what we saw in the streets here in Los Angeles and across the country this weekend.
And we have NBA champion Kendrick Perkins with us. Kendrick is the pride of Beaumont, Texas, where I worked for 4 years. He's probably the greatest basketball player ever to come out of that city. And, of course, went on to a long NBA career and is now on ESPN. Perk, how are you holding up?
Hey, fellas, how y'all doing, man? First of all, thanks for having me on. And, you know, hey, we just, you know, we're going to take it one day at a time. You know, we all go get through this together. And like I said, you know, like I'm going to tell you guys, you know, to start off, you know, yes, you know, racism is a key factor in this, what we're going through. But we can't change racism overnight. You know what I mean? But the thing that we can change is the system. Like, we could change the system. Racism been around for hundreds of years. Thing we can't change is that overnight, but we could change the system. And, you know, to the people out there of any race that got hate and racism in their heart, you know, they just need to cleanse their soul. But to move forward, we need to figure out how can we fix the problem now. And to me, fixing the problem now is changing the system.
Tell us your friends, you, what kind of racism have you experienced?
Well, you know, growing up, like you said, in Beaumont, Texas, the biggest thing that I've experienced is, you know, the James Byrd Jr. killing down there in Jasper, Texas, is when I was, you know, in the seventh grade. And that was the biggest thing that came about. And far as with me being in school down there in Texas, I mean, but, you know, we deal with racism all the time. From different angles. It's not just African Americans, it's not just white people, it's not just the Spanish people. I mean, you know, everyone has experienced some type of racism. And, you know, that was the biggest thing that I ever experienced. I never really dealt with anything, you know, with racism as far as on my end growing up in Beaumont, Texas, besides the James Byrd Jr. Killing back in when I was in middle school.
Yeah. We're talking to NBA champion Kendrick Perkins. This is Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Perk, I can't decide what the right side of this issue is. Some people say that if you're an NBA player, particularly an all-star player, a top player in the league, that you should be obligated to speak up and join the cause here. On the other side, I don't think anybody should be forced to say something that they don't personally feel. How do you think NBA stars, do you think that it's they should be obligated to speak up, or only if they feel passionate about it?
Only if you feel passionate about it. Why would you force somebody to speak up if they don't feel that way about it? Like, that's not how it goes. You should speak how you feel, or if you don't want to speak on it, you don't have anything to say. At the end of the day, I mean, it's great that we all have a voice, and it's great for people to step up and speak on it, you know, if you feel that way. But trying to put that title of being obligated to speak up on a situation, I don't like that. Like, if somebody feels a certain type of way, then speak on it. Because think about it. Us speaking on it as former athletes, or me as a former NBA player, or when I was an NBA player, what really has it changed? It hasn't changed anything. So, I mean, yeah, you speak on it to bring awareness to it, but it hasn't changed. Not unless you're actually going to sit down and taking a trip, you know, to the White House and going to sit down and talking with the, you know, the people that are in our front offices and having a real sit down and a conversation. I mean, things haven't changed. So I don't think people should be obligated to speak out. But if they feel like it, it would be greatly appreciated.
You talked about making changes. You know, where do you start? How do you start?
Well, I mean, to me, it's almost like you gotta. I think, you know, when anytime it has something to do with the police and any race, I think, you know, and you have footage and evidence out like that, you know, arrest should be made immediately. Don't wait on it. Because at the end of the day, that is the problem. People are screaming, no justice, no peace, because it took so long for, you know, the police officer to get arrested, and we still have three other police officers that have not been arrested. So that is the problem. Like, if those guys were arrested when they done that, like, you know, a day later, then we wouldn't even have to deal with this disaster that we're dealing with right now, especially this past weekend.
We're talking to Kendrick Perkins. Perk, last thing for me, I wanted to ask you at least one sports question here because I saw you on The Jump today. There are some people that think basketball maybe is taking a huge risk coming back. There are other people that feel that this could be a really good thing for our country. I know you are in favor of the NBA coming back, and they may announce that they're doing it this week. Why? Just give me your thoughts on why you think it's important for the NBA to come back.
Well, I think it's needed. When you look at the NBA, it's not only, like I said on The Jump, it's not just a sanctuary for athletes. It's a sanctuary for all fans and a lot of people. You know, you just think about it. It's that 2.5 or 3 hours that you're focused and enjoying yourself watching a basketball game that you didn't lost focus or lost track of all the worries you had in the world just for that time. And not only is it great for the African-American culture, but it's great for all cultures. And I think it's needed right now. It's therapy. Like I said today on The Jump, it's therapy. Right now, you know, we don't have anything to do. My TV been on CNN for the last 3 days. They haven't turned in my front room. And I just think sports bring a different life and just, you know, it's just something that we need and I think it would be great for our whole, you know, for the whole world, not just America. You're talking about fans coming together, black, white, whatever race they are, that are embracing their team together, unity. Like, that's what we need right now.
Hey, Perk, thank you very much for coming on. Appreciate it. Look forward to having you back on to talk some basketball as the playoffs start happening here as we get later into the summer.
Hey, fellas, thank y'all, man. Anytime, man, and y'all be safe and God bless.
You too, cool. Perk. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
By the way, I agree with him. I know that it's there are some people that, and you and I have been talking a lot about, you know, before our show was basically became this, what it is today, that I think this could be a major shot in the arm for the country if they do it safe and do it smartly. I hope the news this week is that they're coming back.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is other news. Baseball seems to be making progress. I mean, there's a lot of good news out there, and we'll get to it as we move through the week. Today is sort of a very different kind of show. We are a sports show, but we're also a Los Angeles show, and this is very much a Los Angeles story. Coming up next for you, Michael Eric Dyson is going to join us. He's a Georgetown professor of sociology, and, of course, he writes for ESPN's The Undefeated. He is coming up next for you. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.